will be reconvening in work session. Thank you. Our CAO, Steve Rhodes, had to leave for the day. And so we have Sia Lindstrom here sitting in for us. So we'll start off with the next agenda topic, which is the Tualatin Watershed Enhancement Collaborative update.
Are you a CWS employee?
Yes.
In the spirit of collaboration.
That's right.
We welcome both Nora Curtis and Stephen Roberts up to the table.
Or maybe I'd become a county employee. Could go either way. Thank you, Chair Harrington and commissioners. I'm Nora Curtis. For members of the public, I'm Nora Curtis. I'm the Managing Director of Utility Operations and Services at Clean Water Services. And with me today is Stephen Roberts, who's the Director of Washington County Land Use and Transportation. And we're here to update the board on the Tualatin Watershed Enhancement Collaborative. Its acronym is TWEC, but I would, for the most part, through this presentation, being refer to it as the collaborative, because I just think it's a better word. The Tualatin Watershed Enhancement Collaborative grew out of an Oregon Solutions project that started in mid-2017 and was focused on the Cedar Mill and North Johnson watershed. And that effort resulted in a declaration of cooperation among 22 different partners in October 18. And that declaration basically set up this collaborative to further implement the goals of the Oregon Solutions project. Just about a year ago, we brought the board a three-year work plan for the collaborative, which included a commitment for annual updates to the board. And this is the first of those updates. So today, I'm going to provide a brief overview of the collaborative, its objectives, its general structure, and the scope. And then Stephen will walk us through the work that the collaborative's completed so far, the work that's currently underway and proposed over the next few years, and then also a timeline of activities for the next couple of years. So the collaborative was originally formed to respond to chronic problems of flooding and erosion, primarily affecting Cedar Mill and Johnson Creek, and those issues affect both private properties and public infrastructure. And while that was a primary objective, to find ways to mitigate those types of problems in that watershed, the original work of those 22 represented organizations in the Oregon Solutions effort identified other objectives that they wanted to try and address while they were also looking at addressing flooding and erosion control. So those objectives included promoting healthy habitats and watersheds, resilient watersheds. We know that most resilient watersheds need a mix of both gray and green infrastructure. Improving coordination between agencies and organizations that do related work. From the very start, we recognized that there was no one organization or entity that had either the capacity or the authority to solve these problems. If they had, it would have been solved a long time ago. So we recognized that there was a need to both build on longstanding partnerships and strengthen those partnerships with key stakeholders. We also wanted to build public awareness and a shared vision of both the problems and their causes, to develop a sense of stewardship among the residents and the businesses and visitors to this watershed. There is a lot of, I think, initial feeling that these are large problems that should be solved by someone, someplace. And I think part of the recognition and the objectives was to really involve the residents and businesses within the watershed to understand their role in solving these issues. One of the key objectives in this effort was to identify ways that we could replicate elements of the program throughout the basin. So while flooding and erosion and these types of issues are chronic problems in Cedar Mill and North Johnson, they certainly are not just relegated to that basin. So from the start, it was hoped that the work of the collaborative in this basin could produce approaches and solutions that then could be applied throughout the entire Tualatin watershed. So the collaborative is a combined effort of both governmental agencies and nonprofits. Everybody works on these issues in different ways, but by coordinating together, we can respond more effectively and avoid this kind of piecemeal response to issues that overall just waste resources. So in the structure of the collaborative, Clean Water Services and Washington County Land Use and Transportation play lead roles, and we're termed co-coordinating entities. And then the cities of Beaverton and Portland and the Tualatin Hills Park and Recreation District and the Tualatin Soil and Water Conservation District, they all each work to address flooding and erosion in different ways. So under the collaborative, these governmental agencies are termed cooperating entities. And then lastly, the Wetlands Conservancy, the Tualatin Watershed, River Watershed Council, and the Willamette Partnerships are nonprofits who are all working on conservation watershed management, and they have expertise and established relationships with elements of the community, and they are termed key partners. So while I mentioned the initial focus of the collaborative's efforts was to address issues within Cedar Mill and North Johnson, some of the programmatic and process tools have broader applicability. For example, as part of the collaborative, we're planning for community enrollment in the National Flood Insurance Program's Community Rating System. This is a program that's administered by FEMA, and it gives property owners discounts on flood insurance on the conditions that local governments take certain actions that would help mitigate flood damage. Those include implementing projects, be they infrastructure projects or green projects, or improving design and construction standards that might reduce risks. Any of the actions of the partners can count towards implementation of the community rating system, but it has to be undertaken. The actual application has to be undertaken by FEMA designated floodplain management entities, and then the collaborative, that's Washington County and the City of Beaverton. So enrollment right now is first planned for unincorporated Washington County, and then following that, the City of Beaverton will also consider enrollment. The Cedar Mill North Johnson watershed also offered a number of opportunities for Clean Water Services in Washington County to continue to coordinate capital projects that can mitigate flooding and erosion problems and do it in a way that contributes to long-term resiliency. For example, LUT is planning to replace the Butner Road culvert where it crosses North Johnson Creek. The plan is to enlarge that culvert so that more water will flow during high water events, and that is expected to reduce some of the flooding impacts upstream of the culvert, so more water will get through downstream. Further downstream on Cedar Mill, we're also coordinating with the Jenkins Road project and other roadway projects that are around the Nike Superblock, and we continue to look for opportunities for this sort of capital project coordination throughout all of the urban portion of the watershed. Oops. The work of both Oregon Solutions and the collaborative to date can really be divided into two kinds of general sets of solutions. Those that are focused on capital infrastructure type projects, and those that are more focused on non-structural and programmatic approaches. So as examples of the types of projects, the infrastructure type projects that might be implemented, they might include modifying culverts like the Butner Road culvert, helping to improve stream processes, enhancements to the stream itself. Those would help to add structure to the stream that would help slow water in some areas, help it detain it in certain floodplain locations, and that would help prevent flooding downstream or elsewhere. We might be talking about actual water detention structures or diversion channels that help move water in certain events so that we can keep it from impacting certain areas. We might also include some storm sewer modifications, the actual piping systems themselves, or realignment of some stream sections. As you may recall, some of the stream sections in this basin have been straightened historically, and so some of this may include some actual meandering projects if we can get enough room to move around there. So in addition to the non-structural programs like enrollment in the community rating system, some of the other programmatic projects might include a willing seller program that might offer voluntary buyouts for structures that are severely impacted that are located in the floodplain. Some of this area was developed before the floodplain rules went into effect, so we actually have structures built in the floodplain. A lot of this is also focused on the actual private property assistance. So that might include both technical assistance, providing information on how people can protect their own property, or maybe some financial assistance. That would include both floodproofing or habitat enhancement and also erosion management. So those are the types of both projects and programs that are still on the table for evaluation within this collaborative. And so I'm going to turn it over to Stephen to talk more about the work in these two areas, as well as proposed efforts on the with the collaborative regarding governance and financing.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So I want to look back at some things that we've done over the past year briefly. The board adopted a three-year work plan about this time last year, and we've been slowly but steadily moving forward on that work plan. Part of that entailed both some new staffing and some staffing reassignments, but with Clean Water Services and LUT. And in the audience today, I'll just point out a couple of folks that are Ann McDonald with Clean Water Services. Has really been integral to this effort, and Jonathan Plowman is a policy analyst in my office and has been sort of our point person on the initiative. And we also have some folks from the city of Beaverton here as well with us, and Damon and a number of other. It's a fairly broad effort, and so we've done a lot of good work, and I really appreciate the cooperation of all the agencies and entities that are partnering with us.
Thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah,
absolutely.
One of the things that we're doing, Nora mentioned, you know, we're also trying to really think more collaboratively about our capital programs, but in particular between Clean Water Services and LUT, but also coordinating with the City of Beaverton and other entities in that area. And again, looking for those win-win opportunities where we have some road infrastructure need and we are looking for opportunities to try to look for benefits to flooding and the natural habitat as well, trying to be much more strategic in our approach to that. One of the things that we've done is published the website. It's twec-or.org. I'm not going to try to give you a tour of it, but it's really an impressive piece of work, and there's a screenshot of it on the slide there. And it's very cool. As you scroll through, there are a number of videos where you can actually hear from folks that live and interact with the watershed. There's a lot of historical information about the watershed, and again, information about what this program is about and what we're trying to collectively achieve there. So what we're doing right now, we are... as Nora mentioned, this is a new collaborative, and there's an organizational infrastructure element that we're also trying to stand up here as we're thinking about these other types of natural and built infrastructure as well. So we're working together with our partners. We're kind of working through this, what's our kind of internal governance and decision-making process. This, again, it's a new thing. We're learning as we go. But again, great spirit of collaboration and partnership, and so we're making really good progress there. As I mentioned, we're looking to coordinate work plans amongst the different entities, how do we best utilize our staffing availability? How do we budget for this? So there, you know, it's a broad-based sort of thing that we're trying to get going here. One of the things that we're looking at is an intergovernmental agreement that would be in particular between Clean Water Services and LUT or Washington County, and really just sort of establishing a framework for us as the co-coordinating entities for how we will deal with money and, you know, how we handle accounting and just sort of conduct our business as the two lead entities. We have already started working together with our capital project teams, really building on that coordination and collaboration that we talked about earlier. And then one of the big things that we're working on right now is getting out to do some what I would call sort of screening level analysis of the potential flood and erosion mitigation benefits of some projects that were identified as a result of the Oregon Solutions work. So just taking that very preliminary analysis discussion of those projects that was done with the Oregon Solutions project and moving it into a more detailed but still relatively high level of screening analysis. And that'll help us sort of decide which of these concepts are potentially worth moving forward. If so, what are the caveats and the concerns that we need to work through with them? And maybe which projects do we just want to take out of consideration because they just don't make a lot of sense or provide limited benefit at a relatively higher cost. So as Nora mentioned, we are looking at enrolling in the community rating system, both the county and then the city of Beaverton, as well as giving consideration to it. That is a process, and so it'll take some time, but we will anticipate working through FEMA's review process and eventually getting to successful enrollment. We're also going to be doing more work to evaluate some of the non-structural programs that Nora mentioned earlier, really thinking about the technical and financial assistance elements. And a lot of those are going to be dependent on cooperation with some of the partner entities that were described earlier. So I'm thinking of Soil and Water Conservation District, Willamette Partnership, the Watershed Council, and others. And I did want to mention, too, that the community rating system enrollment, that is a process we're sort of working through. Again, what are the kind of organizational infrastructure demands that would come with that? And so we'll be back to brief the board at some point before we proceed with submitting an actual application to FEMA to initiate that review process. And as I mentioned, so continuing work on into the next couple fiscal years probably to complete that CRS, the community rating system enrollment process. As I mentioned, the city of Beaverton is evaluating whether they may join into that program as well. We'll continue working together with our partners to develop and flesh out the evaluation and prioritization criteria that we talked about for different flood and erosion mitigation projects, and again, with an eye towards where we can also gain some habitat benefits. And then prioritization of those potential projects will be sort of the next level of analysis that we'll do with that. And again, continuing to work on both internally, but also kind of on an external facing aspect of this, how do we establish an ongoing sort of governance and funding structure for these initiatives? And we have a lot more work to do, and we'll be back to chat with you more at some point in the future about that as well.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Given the outline here of the work forecast, mm-hmm. for the work that needs to be done in your organization, mm-hmm. Stephen, is that handled through current planning or long-term planning? And the answer to that will let me know if that's part of your annual work plan resource leveling or
I think the answer is that there may be some involvement, but really what's happening here, it's really throughout the organization. So I mentioned Jonathan earlier, works in the director's office, and he's sort of our point person, but we're also working with our capital project team. We're going to be working, I think, to a limited extent, perhaps, with current planning. There may be some ordinance changes that will be needed because of enrollment in the community rating system would require some amendments to our floodplain regulation, and that would work through an ordinance process at some point in the future. So it really touches all different aspects of land use and transportation, and I think Nora would say the same is true at Clean Water Services.
Now, but isn't this work in LUT done because of two roles that I'm thinking of? Mm-hmm. One is responsibility for the urban unincorporated areas, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the other is with regard to the LUT road responsibility that Washington County has.
Right. Yes. So I would say our involvement sort of hinges on maybe three things. So we sort of have the land use oversight of the urban unincorporated areas. We also are the floodplain administrator for those urban unincorporated areas. And then, yes, and certainly our roadway capital improvement programs. And many of those programs, we're finding more and more stormwater is becoming a really critical issue in being able to successfully construct those projects. The water quality and erosion management requirements are only getting more stringent, which they should, but it does create new challenges and opportunities, I would say, for us to work together.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going forward, we will have some public events, and we're talking specifically about a couple of educational symposiums that we're planning to put on in partnership with our other entities. And part of that is really just working with the public to kind of help them to understand what it means to live in a dynamic watershed, and think about how we all collectively interact with it and what are the things that individuals can do that are living in those areas to help enhance the habitat and the benefit that comes with those natural areas. We'll be, again, going forward, we'll be starting to think about how we may implement some of those sort of non-structural programmatic things, the technical and financial assistance programs that would potentially assist private partners. And again, a lot of these would be subject to commitments from our partners that are probably a little bit more directly engaged in this kind of activity out in the public. And then we'll continue, obviously, to, in addition to specific briefings that will be needed along the way here, we'll be coming back to continue to provide you with annual updates on our progress here.
I'm just going to put a little shout out for an effort that took place almost 20 years ago now. It was the Make Our Park Whole Committee. It was a panel of people, engineers, biologists, hydrologists. It's the last major legal work I did before I came on the board. Mm-hmm. But we were able to eventually a land use battle that eventually led to public ownership of 22 mm-hmm. acres of what's now the Southwoods. And anybody ever walked through the Southwoods at the nature park, especially in the winter months, sees all the water that's there. We don't really want to see homes in floodplains. And to have had 239 townhomes and a possible commercial pad mm-hmm. to have been that was really proposed to be built in not what's now Southwoods would have just mm-hmm. added to our problems. And it's something that I'm always gratified when I go by the nature park and see that effort. It's better to be proactive rather than reactive in that case. And we didn't need that additional development. We need development and more housing in this county, but not in that particular spot and not on certain places on the reaches of the Johnson Creek or Beaverton Creek.
Yeah, and I think that highlights really that inherent tension that we do want to keep a constrained urban growth boundary and encourage more dense infill, but also we have these resource areas that we value and need to protect. So we're always on that kind of debating those two priorities. Absolutely. In fact, we'll be talking about that more this afternoon. So this is just a visual of some of the things that we just talked about, and wanted to point out that where you see the crosshatch areas, those are rough time frames for when we anticipate that we'll be back to have conversations with you potentially about some of the various aspects. So probably the earliest one will be a discussion about potential enrollment in the community rating system, what we think that program would look like, what the potential benefits that we could provide to our floodplain residents in terms of discounts that might be eligible. And then what we think would be sort of the staffing and other costs that would come with implementing that kind of a program. You'll see, too, the two educational symposiums. We're looking at one probably in the second quarter of this year, and then one about a year later, too, in 2021. Kind of this lot of ongoing work about development, the funding and governance, screening, priorities for projects and evaluating technical assistance and other grants. So that, oh, I'm sorry.
You will also see in both your, in budget review of both the county and the district, you'll see specific capital line items, at least within the district's budget, specifically towards the collaborative's work. And that's part of the IGA that Jonathan, or that Stephen spoke about, where we will be talking about, you know, we can only contract with one organization, but how do we share these costs? So we've got some line items specifically to address the collaborative's work.
So because there is a timeline up, mm-hmm. so I understand that there are budget decisions that, or presence in the budget that we will see as we review the budget and adopt the budget for completion the end of that. Is that calendar Q2 or calendar 20?
These are calendar year, yes.
Yeah, so calendar quarter Q2. Mm-hmm. Then, Stephen, in your remarks, you mentioned an IGA earlier. Mm-hmm. So really what I'm trying to get at is, with this timeline, where are there, if there are any, mm-hmm. beyond budget, where are their board decision points?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's a good point. We can clarify this and resend it to you. So I think, obviously, with the community rating system, we'll need your blessing to proceed with submitting that application to FEMA. So we'll want to provide you some additional background before we do that. And then there will really be... I don't think we've gotten into the details of mapping out exactly what the process is going to look like for certain of these things, but as we start talking about funding and governance, that could mean, are we looking to raise additional revenues in some way? And clearly there will be a discussion that has to happen with the board and the community. And I neglected to mention, too, we didn't show it here because, again, we haven't mapped it out specifically yet, but there will be a number of touch points, obviously, with the community where we're going to need to engage with people out there to understand, you know, their wants and needs, and also discuss potential paths forward with them on a variety of these issues too. So I wanted to make clear that we'll also be working that into a more detailed work plan too as we go forward.
And I as one member of five, am very comfortable and confident in the scheme that. The track record that you have of bringing this information to us for to highlight it so that we have the benefit of hearing one another's questions and our discussion before we are at those decision points. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think we're done with our formal presentation, so we're happy to answer any questions.
Any other board questions or comments?
I'd just like to make a comment. This is in District 2, part of all of Washington County, and I just wanted to say thank you for the efforts. I sat in on some of the early meetings when the collaborative was really coming together, and then watching it transform into a working group and really with everything on the ground and moving forward. I really appreciate the effort from the two of you, but also from the rest of the group that's involved in the collaborative. So thank you very much.
Yeah, they're doing all the work.
And if I
let's
can,
be honest.
If I can be of any help, if you please let me know. I'm always available.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate it.
I mean, it's a comprehensive plan, just not for District 2, but for every district. Are you going to have some briefing on the sensitive projects, particularly sensitive ones? I know the one that's up in her area, and I sat on the Regional Solutions Committee for a while. It mm-hmm. always seemed to come up. But for instance, in District 3, what mm-hmm. What particularly do you see as a flashpoint?
Well, I think the way this, in terms of the geography, the way this is rolling out right now, we're really thinking in the Cedar Mill and North Johnson Basin, which really falls within Commissioner Teresa's district, but we are hoping that we'll have.
And it flows down into Commissioner Scouten's district.
That's true. I think
everything flows downhill.
That's
right.
I mean, the nature park, yes, it's inside my district.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, so part of the takeaway from this effort is that we are hoping that we'll learn lessons and maybe develop structures and programs that will be applicable in other watersheds. So we're starting sort of in a focused geographic area, hoping to build some momentum here, establish some programs and a structure, and then
scale it up,
evaluate. Yeah, can we roll it out then into Fano Creek Basin and Beaverton Creek?
Butternut Creek.
Right.
You will be seeing an IGA coming to you within the next couple of months between the district and THPRD regarding the work with the Jenkins project. So it's the stormwater and flood stream enhancement work that's associated with both the Jenkins Road project and our sanitary sewer. It involves work within the nature park. So pretty significant effort over a couple of year construction period. So we've been working closely with them, and that IGA will be coming to you shortly within the next couple of months.
Well, I actually have a question about this scaling up. Mm. I think we're all in agreement that the idea of applying this model to other watersheds is good. You've noted in your materials that this is the pilot for doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for some further insight as to, you know, this is, you're gaining experience now through this program. I'm not sure that we're at the point yet of starting to identify within the whole watershed the other basins where this might apply. I've been thinking that we're probably 2 years out from that, but I need you to ground that in terms of where this board may be at a juncture for saying, yes, we're on the journey for example, for applying that model to just the next one or whatever.
So there are a couple of issues. One are the more programmatic solutions. So if we do stand up some sort of private property technical assistance program through one of our nonprofit partners, we may be able to apply that more broadly and sooner. At the same time we're doing that effort, we're doing our specific sub-basin planning as it relates to hydro modification. So there is a prioritization process that we are working through with the Advisory Commission on where we focus those planning efforts. And as those plans are developed, some of the techniques or projects that we pilot in this basin, we may identify where they could be applied in other basins. So there's a number of concurrent efforts going on. Some of the programmatic things I think we could roll out more broadly sooner, and some of the more project-specific ones may depend on this more in-depth sub-basin planning that's focused on stormwater and hydro modification.
I'm assuming that will visibility into that will come to us in the second half of the year.
Yes, so we have a presentation plan. You gave the your advisory, the Clean Water Services Advisory Commission, a charge few months ago to basically get their input on the prioritization process for sub-basin planning. We are doing the first of our updates with them on tomorrow evening. So that process is moving forward, and then as we get their input, I would imagine we'd be coming back to you maybe towards the end of this calendar year with that process to get your head nod on that.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah, and I think this what Nora was just saying too kind of reminds me that there are a number of things that we're doing as a part of our normal agency work, again, where there is a lot of cross-pollination and overlap with this specific collaborative effort too. And so we're in very much regular communication on all of these things too.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Just for expanding, I mean, mm-hmm. I understand that we're starting in one district, but what happens quickly is people say, well, how about mine? And I just wanted to know if there was something sensitive that you were talking about Fano Creek in my particular case. Mm-hmm. Dick, I don't know what would be in yours. Maybe
Fano Creek goes through three districts.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Butternut Creek has been another problematic one, and that's one that goes in my district as well as Commissioner Willie. So these streams span districts easily.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. The lower areas.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you
very much. We'll move on now to the Regional Transportation Funding Measure Update. This additional...
Why don't you sit here?
Oh, no.
Why don't you sit here?
What is a regional funding major? Most of us haven't ever heard of it before.
Well, we're coming to brief you for the first time today.
Yeah. Would it be never mind. Maybe not the right time to make jokes.
Right.
Hey.
Just commissioners.
Metro Councilor.
So if we could get settled before we start with introducing our panel here, and I would like to welcome Metro Councilor Juan Carlos Gonzalez, as well as Andy Shaw of Metro, joining our director, Stephen Rhodes, and our premier policy analyst, Chris Deffenbach.
Stephen Roberts.
Did I say Stephen Rhodes? Stephen Roberts.
They look alike.
We're getting used to it.
Yeah, really. I also have the question, this hard copy packet, does this go along, that was left at our table, does this go along with this topic?
This is regard to the email that I sent late last night, and we were hoping to get the board's blessing for the chair to sign this letter so that we can send it to...
Oh, I haven't even had the chance to read this letter with all that we've had coming at us today.
I know, and I do apologize. We got this out late.
No, this is task force.
It's for the task force, yeah.
For the task force.
Okay, so before we close on this whole topic, let's give ourselves a chance to read this letter and close on it.
That would be excellent. Thank you.
Okay, you can help us with that. Great.
Okay, so we're back to the region-wide programs. I'm pleased to have Annie Shaw here and Councilor Gonzalez to share the preliminary proposal for the region-wide program elements of the potential regional transportation funding measure. And just a reminder, you saw an initial list of these projects last summer and submitted your comments on priorities at that time to the task force, and that letter from last summer is in your packet. And then since then, Metro staff have been working with Metro Council to better define the elements, and they're out now seeking input not only on the elements but also on the criteria for how the funds could be allocated and on how you measure success. Last Wednesday, the task force shared their comments on what you're going to see here, and so I think this is really an opportunity for you to share your comments as this process is in this collection. And then there'll also be, I'm sure, if you think of something later, we can also submit something to Metro Council as they begin to pull the whole package together in April. So that's the introduction I have, and I'm going to turn it over to Councilor Gonzalez and Andy.
Thank you. Well, I'll kick us off with the first slide here, Chair Harrington and esteemed commissioners. Thank you for having us today. As you know, we've been working together on a 2020 transportation measure. And today, really, the point of the conversation is to get your feedback on the programs. And the programs come in tandem with, of course, a conversation that we've had over the course of the last few months on Tier 1 and Tier 2 programs, Tier 1 and Tier 2 investments, which are corridor investments that have been identified through the region. Something that I'm really keen on hearing from the county commission, from the county in general on the programs is how Metro can continue to develop clear outcomes on how the money will make an impact to communities across Washington County. The programs bucket, as we call it, is very important. As we know, a corridor, a right-of-way, can have a real impact for the communities that live along that right-of-way. But there are many other parts of the region and communities, neighborhoods, households that don't live within immediate walk of a corridor. And these programs are an incredible opportunity to scale that and to really make those investments a lot more micro to the region. And without further ado, I'll let Andy Shaw present. And, of course, thank you, Commissioner Treese, for being a co-chair on the task force.
And thanks a lot to Chris and Stephen for all their partnership along the way helping us shepherd along this large task force and regional effort to get to a 2020 transportation measure.
And we're almost done. There's
a slide where we can sort of celebrate how far along we've come in all the work to date. You've seen
this. Yes, welcome to March.
Yes.
It's been a lot of work.
So you've seen some of these early slides before, but I think it's worth reminding ourselves of the context here. So we're putting together a measure for the council's consideration, hopefully in the May timeframe, for them to look at referring a measure to the November ballot. And it has these major elements of investment in corridors, and we're looking at 13 Tier 1 corridors. We have four additional Tier 2 corridors that the task force will be examining in the next week, and those will move forward. The ones that get recommendation or get support or get positive feedback, I should say, will advance to the council for consideration to add to the measure. In addition, we've been talking since last year about a series of region-wide programs that act as annual funding programs for a variety of areas, and we spent a lot of time, we'll go through a little bit of that, trying to develop out what the priorities for those programmatic investment areas should be. We have yet to get to the major question of accountability and oversight, which is something we always talk about and always incorporate into regional funding measures. And of course, all of this is intended to advance regional policy. So you've seen this slide before as well. This is a listing of the priorities that the council and the task force laid out at the beginning of this process. We've tried to keep this in mind when we look at corridor investments, when we look at program investments as well. So here's that timeline that we looked at, and we had one that squished up that one bubble at your comment, Chair Harrington. This is not that one, apparently. But we've moved through the identification of high-priority corridors and really digging into advancing projects within those corridors over the summer with the help of local investment teams. The task force spent a good chunk of time this summer developing out concepts for region-wide programs. We actually had 24 concepts for region-wide programs that got narrowed during the fall. We've moved through the Tier 1 corridor process through discussion around mechanisms, gotten direction from our council around looking at a narrower set of mechanisms this winter. And we're now in this this phase of looking more deeply at the programs, looking at Tier 2 corridors, and next month at the oversight process with our eye on that final package in the late spring. So I think it's also helpful to remember with programs that the roots of all this is the regional policy, the collaboration that we all do to achieve a set of regional transportation plans that have many sub-plans, and the goals for investment, the goals for outcomes within that. The flowers are the investments we make, the outcomes out on the ground, sorry, the leaves are the investments we make, the outcomes on the ground. But the fact that these are all rooted in long-time regional policy and goals that were set based on deep collaboration and collaborative work with jurisdictional partners. Oh, there we go. So for programs in specific, as I mentioned, we spent a lot of time in the spring developing out concepts that included community forums. It actually dates back into our work around the regional transportation plan and getting to an updated regional transportation plan at the end of of 2018, sorry, not last calendar year. We also did some survey work to identify community priorities in the process, then really brought it through to the task force, had a series of meetings there to talk about program concepts, and got feedback from the task force, which we brought to the council, and the council narrowed to these 10 program areas that we're talking about today. We've spent a lot of time since then refining how could we administer these programs, what kind of things could be funded, what kind of outcomes could we see, and we've begun some deep engagement with community around goals and hopes and dreams for these various programs. So here are the 10 different areas that have been highlighted or identified for further work. Really now we're in the process of trying to get your feedback from you, feedback from others about the goals for these outcomes, and that will inform a staff recommendation at the end of this month and council dialogue through April to talk about scaling and sizing these different programs. And I think so it's helpful to think about what does that mean. So for example, I'll just pick out the Safe Routes to Schools program. If we scaled that down from a financial point of view, you could identify things like programming in schools to educate parents and students about how to safely bike and walk to school, identifying routes that exist for that school, but that might be a financially less expensive approach to take. If you scaled that up a little bit, you could think about making some capital investments in sidewalks, in flashing beacons, and safe, making the crossings safer. If you scaled it up further, you could do both programming and capital investments. So just one example of the kind of thing that we're going to be stepping into as we really define these programs more carefully. And that's the kind of input that we're looking for from you and others. I think you've been briefed on these, but just to run through them real quickly, the Better Bus program bucket, this is the concept of outside the 13 corridors that we've identified for specific investments and some, in most cases, significant enhanced transit investments. Where are there other places, key intersections, key arterials, where there could be additional small investments that help get the bus out of traffic, get it moving through faster so it's a more reliable source of transit? Moving on to electric bus, TriMet is already working on electrifying its bus system, but it's at a slower pace than many would hope, and the goal here is to set a date by which we would never buy another diesel bus and take that source. Right now, TriMet's diesel buses are the largest source of diesel pollution in the region, so it's an enormous potential to reduce air pollution and GHG gases just from that one source. Affordable fares for students. We're looking at a program to provide either free or reduced passes to youth, help get them to school, to work throughout the region. Anti-displacement strategies. One thing we've learned from making major transit investments in corridors is it does tend to achieve one of the goals that we have for major transit investments, which is increasing the value, increasing the availability of housing in those areas. It also increases the cost of housing often, and it can have a displacement effect along with the effect that we intend, which is to increase community value and improve things. This is a program that would learn from the success of our Southwest Corridor process and bring into each of the other corridors an engagement process to look at what are the kinds of steps that could be taken to reduce or mitigate displacement. And then beyond that, identify what those investments are, and we could look to some of the other buckets and other sources for funding those investments. That was another lesson learned from the Southwest Corridors. We didn't identify the funding up front for how we would make the investments that were recommended from the equitable development process in Southwest Corridor. Affordable housing, this would be a key, probably, source of revenues for some of those key anti-displacement investments, but you could think of other buckets like the safety bucket we'll talk about and other sources that could be used to implement anti-displacement recommendations. Growth in transportation. Another thing we've learned in this process is a number of the corridors and a number of the projects that we are looking at for this process weren't as far along as we would like them to be and weren't as ready for investment. We've been operating under quite a scarcity sort of mentality. We'd like to be ready for the next state package, for the next regional measure, and plan out some additional corridors with additional resources for planning, for growth, and for the future. Safe routes to schools, I think this is something you're well familiar with. We do have some identified regional sources and some state sources. This would beef up the number of places, number of schools where we could make investments to help get kids more safely to and from school. And then safety hotspots. Again, a significant focus of investments in the corridors we've identified is safety, but there are many other places in the region where people are getting hit, where there are serious injuries and deaths from traffic accidents or traffic crashes. This is an ongoing programmatic bucket to say where are those places where we're seeing new housing, new increases in traffic cause additional safety issues that we want to get ahead of on a regular basis and not just leave it to the 13 corridors that or 13 plus tier 2 corridors that we're focusing on. And regional walking and biking connections. This is really to look at our region's active transportation plan and try to more quickly than in 200 years actually build out that network by making deliberate investments in the key routes that people use to bike to work and to school.
Could you calculate 200 years out exactly?
We with the adopted active transportation plan, I think it was 190 years.
Oh, you're serious?
Of time. I was not kidding.
It was 128.
At the current
rate.
Way too long.
Somebody pointy-headed looked at the amount of resource coming in and the plan that we have for investing in active transportation and calculated roughly 200 years of time to build it out.
Does that account for rising cost of construction?
Probably not.
I don't think it's a year of expenditure calculation. No, no. We have recently approved a regional parks and nature measure, which will bring additional resources. So that will advance the time frame here. But this would be further investment to
still greater than 100 years.
Correct. Still a lot of investment that we've planned that we don't yet have identified resources for all of those investments. Revitalizing Main Streets is another important one that the council furthered, which is looking at some of the places that are key corridors for smaller towns that serve as Main Streets in a Sherwood, in a Troutdale, but they don't rise to the level of major arterial that warrants investments like we're looking at with the 13 major corridors in Tier 1, but still need safety, pedestrian, parking, other sorts of investments that can help that smaller jurisdiction advance their interests. So this would be an ongoing funding bucket to provide Main Streets revitalization resources. So that's a quick run through. Sorry if that was very fast, but I know we've talked about this a couple times and there's been some briefing along the way. We're really interested in hearing from you. What are the kinds of outcomes in these various buckets that you would like to see advance at the regional level? And some sense of scaling, I think, would also be helpful, the way we talked about with the Safe Routes to Schools program. So unless there are specific questions, we'd love to hear your feedback.
I have a question on the letter. I don't really have any issue with it, but I'm a little perplexed as to what exactly is being studied. As you know, House Bill 2017, we have some north and south improvements, and I, in different hat and a different role with ODOT, they very much want to cooperate and be involved in that 217 project. That's a real goal of theirs. Is a couple of million bucks that may or may not happen, is that to study not what's existing with ODOT that they're proposing to put in, it's the segments that are to be done? Is that what's happening? Because I don't want to get us cobbled up where we're at cross purposes here.
We maybe need to separate these. We were trying to spend a little bit of time. These are two different things. They're asking for comments on the region-wide programs. Okay. And what we left you is something that we owe the task force back to their comments on the Tier 2. So
you don't want to comment on our Tier 2 stuff, huh? Okay.
So I'm sorry for the confusion. This is due back to the task force, and we were trying to give you a little. We were trying to squeeze this in at the end of this presentation since we had.
So let's not be squeezed at the moment. Let's come back to the main objective here, which is around the program-wide concepts and feedback that we may have for the program aspect of the measure. So you showed us all the different areas Yep. Then the other thing I'm wondering about, I wish I'd had it in front of me right now, the desired outcomes in an earlier slide. So these are the different program areas that you've examined, right? And so you've tried to use through the task force this narrowing process. Could you go back to the desired outcomes for the whole major program? Because for myself, the question that you're asking about additional feedback, I don't really think I have new feedback. Rather, I find myself wanting to come back to these outcomes. Mm-hmm. And it comes back to, how do we make sure we're serving people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And doing so in that larger context, because people breathe air, right? People are trying to get around. We want people to be able to work here and live here for multiple decades moving forward. So each of these is still very important. I know it's a very difficult task to go through that narrowing. In the end, there is a need for a measure, a significant measure that will make significant impact for our community.
Yeah.
I am a little hesitant to have us beat one another up too much in refining that, because I know it's not going to solve all of the demands that we have. We're so far behind. We need to make appreciable steps going forward. And I know that the task force, that Metro staff, in being advised by that and providing advisement and recommendations to your council, that you're trying to make sure that there's enough in this for as close to everyone, and I put that in air quotes, as you possibly can. So I don't find myself in a position of saying, well, if you refine the criteria, it'll make a difference between point A and point B.
Yeah.
That's just where I'm coming from. So Commissioner Treese.
I really appreciate that comment, Chair, and I appreciate the concept. What I'd like to do, if we go back to the programs just for a minute, is to talk a little bit about where I have heard from our base in Washington County concerns about this. So, and through testimony, through discussion with mayors or whatever, the places where I think everybody's in agreement up to maybe the last two, actually, electric buses. I think that I've heard comments about the fact that we don't have enough service here in the first place, so we need additional service. So I've heard that. And I'm just putting these out on the table for you all to think about. And the other one is the affordable fares for students. There's been discussion in this part of the region that is not as applicable as it is in Multnomah County. So I'm just bringing those two things up for you to think about when you provide feedback about these programs.
So for the sake of board discussion?
Yeah. I'm just putting that out for the sake of board discussion. I still tend to stay in the camp that you talked about first. So, but I want to be respectful of what I've heard from other elected officials and from our communities.
Yes.
So from my standpoint on electric buses, as is noted, we have our transit system is a major generator of diesel emissions. And we know that people throughout our regional community are suffering from air quality. And we, as a region, have to help invest in the fleet changes. So I think it's very valid that this be done throughout our network. So I'm not buying the argument that because the service level in Washington County isn't as extensive as in Multnomah County, that we should dial that back. On the affordable fares for students, I know what impact having a youth bus pass made to me in my embracing transit youth as an adult. And given that we have a large amount of low income, students of low income here in our school districts in Washington County, including in the Beaverton School District that covers significant portions of the urban unincorporated areas where there is no mayor. I think too that there is both near-term and short-term benefit from investing in that. So yes, I think it is important for us to acknowledge we are hearing feedback.
That's my only point.
Yep, and thank you very much for raising that. But from my vantage point as a county commissioner, I think all of these still need to be in the mix. And no, I can't make your job of winnowing easier.
Yeah.
Don't have that magic wand.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to point out, while I brought up those two issues, there's still eight others where I think that there's a lot of consensus. And I just bring those two up, as you mentioned, to Aaron. Are there any other?
No, I would, I probably would be different than the chair, right? In the districts that I represent, they have busing services that they pay for. That's paid through a local property tax levy. And I happen to have been born, grew up in Portland, so I understand their system there. But the amount of cost that would be sent to Portland that our taxpayers here, and that's what I'm hearing from folks that I know, is they feel an unfair burden. So.
And you're talking about the affordable fares.
I'm talking about the passes. What's happening in Portland, as you know, is the school district doesn't spend any money for that. And so that they're looking for somebody else to pay for that, in whether it be Beaverton, whether it be Tigard, whether it be Sherwood, that's built into their basis as far as their costs. And so they're concerned about that. And secondly, on the diesel emissions, I agree on that one, that we need to reduce them. But frankly, with the amount of transit, I mean, the reason that we are spending so much time on the road is we don't have transit, at least down in the Southwest Corridor. And we've got folks, everything from elderly and handicapped who have no access to anything particularly, to folks who just can't get from point A to point B. So we wonder why our roads are clogged. Well, there's no way to get there other than by automobile. And not everybody is in a position that, you know, they're going to jump on a bike or they're going to walk 3 miles. They just are not in that kind of health condition. So maybe we all should be, but we're not. And so anyway, those are flashpoints. And you're looking for regional consensus. And those are the things that people bite at. You know, they're kind of saying, I don't think that serves my needs. So just a contrasting viewpoint.
How far along are we now on the half fare program for low income individuals? I think I heard something on the order of 19,000 to 20,000. There are now something like 19,000 to 20,000 cardholders, if you want to use that term.
Yeah, I think we heard about this at the AP 2017 Trans Advisory Committee a week ago, and I think the number they gave us was 30,000. Yeah, there it is. My notes: 30,000 low income fare have signed up. And they've tried to estimate, there's like 400,000 people eligible, but they know not all of them would possibly sign up. So, but yeah, 30,000.
Okay. So there's still, what kind of unrealized potential is there in that program?
That's what they're trying to estimate right now. There is more unrealized potential, but it has been, signing up has been a little bit faster than they expected.
Okay, so I mean, I like to, I guess, sort of, I guess I would sort of echo the commissioners, Therese and Rogers. I mean, in some ways, this is about, you know, picking between children, your family. You've got 8 or 9 children.
Yeah.
But I think, given the comments that you've already heard, I would sort of maybe ditto that, and I would add to it, I'd like to see us really get the full potential realized on the low half fare program, and then pivot to see what we might do with respect to very specific students. Because I think students can benefit from the program that we already have in place. But I mean, this is tough. This is tough stuff.
I'd like to make another comment about the affordable fares for students, and coming to this project, I was thinking in terms of transportation to and from school. And that's, you know, where the duplication piece that you were talking about, Roy. But as I've listened to public testimony, as I've learned more and more, it's almost more about the mode shift, training people to, and our young people to move from the mentality of driving a car to looking at the potentials for public transit. So I have a different viewpoint than I had going into this, especially in relationship to Washington County. You know, it is different. We still fund our, you know, our school districts through the state funding. They provide the school buses, but it's really about other activities as well. So I just want to point that out, that my mindset has shifted on this.
Well, and of course, lawsuits can't afford cars. The family can't afford to provide them with an automobile. So, yeah, this is, yeah. That's what I like about the half fare on the low income side, is that it gives people opportunity to gain some independence and ability to pay for things that they can't, otherwise they can't even get around very well.
If I could come back to revitalizing Main Street, particularly because of the example areas that I heard you express. I know Sherwood was one of them. I can't remember the other one.
Troutdale.
Morgan
City.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit struggling with this one a little bit, because when having spent time in each of those centers and main streets, they have pretty complete sidewalks along the main streets. Now, certainly going from there out a half mile, they don't necessarily have those sidewalks in. And there, I know there are other programs for revitalizing main streets, but given that this is a transportation-related measure, and the fact that there is so much refinement that you're going to have to do to get down to the nitty-gritty, because we have to stuff it all into a 5-pound sack, that's the one where if there are clear examples of projects, right, the leaves that you talked about on the tree, fine, but compared to the impacts that I imagine, and I say that really committed for decades around building senses of place, but I know that there are many different programs for building a sense of place. So if there are specific areas for the transportation infrastructure, great, but not so much on the program development side, compared to other things where I know that, you know, we just don't have the funding mechanisms for those. That's all.
You know, in relationship to that particular program, if I wind back the clock and think about some of our discussions, and I ask Chris and Stephen if I'm accurate about this, when we were looking at 99W and whether or not 99W would move into a tier one or not initially, way back when, one of the things that we were talking about was this revitalization of main streets as being something that helped to support some of those communities that may not move into tier one. So I'm just pointing out that that was one of, when we were talking about which programs we would move forward, that was one of our thoughts. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think that's part of the idea. Like Andy was saying, there are needs well beyond the corridors that have been identified in this process. And so this is an opportunity to evaluate, you know, bring some of those areas potentially into the broader measure. And I think for us too, I just, as I was looking through these last night, I was thinking that, you know, for us in particular, even like our Alexander Street project in the Aloha Town Center might be an example of a project. We have some funding to initiate design and planning work on that, but no money for construction. And so there may be opportunities to.
So know, maybe Sherwood and Troutdale
unincorporated areas.
The best.
Troutdale is actually a really good example. Halsey Boulevard, it's actually Wood Village to Troutdale, and it is their main street.
Well, I think it's the idea of Main Street that's a whole different land use category.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think you may need to rename that.
The nomenclature.
Revitalizing areas or revitalizing
place.
Corridor areas.
These new places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, something like TV Highway, that would be a challenge. That's not a main street, but if you get a quieter parallel street where you could nurtured development, have access by way of Tiahuasca Highway, but not be impacted as negatively, could be a place like Alexander Street that kind of fits that kind of category of revitalizing. I think that's a town center. Maybe that's the term that you're trying to look for rather than.
That's part of the Iloa Town Center. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My point isn't that can we imagine these places as eligible, but I know how hard it is at this juncture to winnowing the proposals down. So that's the only thing that I could even pull out of myself as something distinguishing.
I will add, in terms of winnowing down, we are in a place where we anticipate that the programs will generate about $50 million a year throughout the life of the measure, which would be separate from the individual capital investments throughout the corridor. So in a way, there is a possibility for us to, you know, spread the peanut butter evenly, if that is what we heard in consensus from the region. But we also have the opportunity to really prioritize here and there based on what we hear. So I do want to, $50 million is a lot of money. I've learned in transportation it is not a lot of money. And especially in our region that has so many different transportation challenges, you know, little improvements can make big differences, but at the end of the day, we won't be able to address all the little improvements that need to be addressed. So the relationship between winnowing and allocation of resources and where we want to put a little more weight or a little less weight is really what we're looking at here.
I think that's where I think the walking and biking connections are. You're looking for places where you can make a lot of impact mm-hmm. for a relatively modest amount of money. Mm-hmm. I think that's a category there where you really can do that.
Yeah. Right.
Active transportation, you're right. Saves lives. It's not just getting around. Yeah.
Save lives and health. And it's relatively inexpensive, at least in the realm of transportation. And can have a huge synergistic effect in terms of the bike max connection, the bike bus connection. This project that I think is going forward this year, like that bridge connection from
Augusta Lane, or
the one over at Beaver Acres School.
Augusta Lane. Yeah,
I'm sorry,
Augusta Lane.
Augusta Lane. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I was actually. I was thinking that's a great local example that could sort of fall under both sort of the active transportation connections and maybe safe routes to school. It's already funded, but it's an example, I think, a local example of something that...
Really cost effective. It's actually quite cost effective and it actually allows the school district to reallocate precious bus resources elsewhere.
Exactly.
I also think the challenge is that most of the proponents, you know, of each individual group that have been really passionate about it, mm-hmm. want to see their program fully funded. And that usually is anywhere between the 5 to 15 to $20 million range. And when you look at annual investment, that clearly is not doable. And I'll just add that as well in terms of, we're definitely looking at what can maximize those localized investments as much as possible for the most people in the region. Unfortunately, it's not as clear cut.
In your mind, and maybe I should have asked Pam that, have you ever thought, and I understand all the impediments to it, but a skin in the game from the locals, meaning that there's some match?
Match.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about match to date.
I was going to suggest that you talk about the application process or what's envisioned as the application mm-hmm. process. Match has not been part of that, but it is an application process, which would lend itself to the opportunity for match.
Yeah, there's
not just allocation.
There's a few ways to think about administration of these programs. Many of them would be similar to existing safe routes or active transportation funding processes, where we seek applications from locals and then have a process of re-evaluating those. The electric bus, fare affordability, those kinds of programs probably be more an allocation to TriMet, because that's the partner that would be implementing those programs. So there's a couple different ways of implementing this. Most of these would be through some kind of grant program, and probably on a multi-year cycle rather than every single year.
But I think the consideration of a match where appropriate mm-hmm. is something to...
There's many, I agree. And you find TriMet's a good example. Everybody wants to point and have them pay. And so once you start saying, well, if we want you to come into our area, maybe we ought to waive some of our development fees for some of your activities. Maybe we ought to look at allocating some of our resources to widen a little stretch of road for that bus pullout. Maybe we ought to not try to encumber you with all kind of development fees in regard to what you're doing. Maybe we
had a local commitment sort of
not concept. Necessarily
matched. Yeah, it always have to be dollars, but I mean, if somebody says I have no skin in the game, I just point and you pay. Yeah, just a thought. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're going to need to wrap this up. Could you take us back to what your needs are and if we have met them or not?
There he goes. No, I think we've heard some really good input on priorities that exist out here and some concepts for scaling that are very helpful. And additionally, some concepts for what's the regional local relationship and what's any expectation for seeking out these resources from locals. Very helpful.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Okay, so this was a topic to go over the region-wide program concepts. Did you have next steps that you wanted to highlight here?
So for them, I guess the question, so this is a chance to get input. You're collecting input from lots of other people right now. You've been out on the road.
We have some work set up.
I'm sure you have it all straight in your head. It's all clear. And so,
Chris, the only thing I would add is there's more work to come, and we'd be pleased, as usual, to come back out as this package comes more firmly together and continue the dialogue. So.
Right. And I was just going to ask, Andy, there's some target dates you have in April when you're going to be bringing this back to the Metro Council.
Correct.
You're going to be firming it up.
So those are on these slides, yes.
That's very hard.
Yes. Early.
Okay, so if we could bring this back to home, our work plan through May is pretty full. So is this topic coming back to us as the Board of Commissioners?
We have some time reserved in May, right, Stephen?
I don't remember the specific date.
As a circle back.
Yeah. I don't want these two folks from Metro walking away from this meeting thinking that, oh, we have all kinds of room in our calendar to bring this in these months, as you've enumerated ahead.
Right. We have built in some placeholders in the rollout to help accommodate touch points with you.
Okay. Yeah. So.
And they're really about the measure as a whole.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
So thank you for being here on the program concepts. We have a problem here, folks. We've been sent information from our staff just yesterday, and through the CAO team, these staff may not realize that in addition to our meeting packet that was published, we also had some information to review for the executive sessions that we have on the agenda. So while it may seem reasonable to you that we've been hit with additional information to digest right away, I'm using my chair's prerogative to say, no, we're not going to be able to give you this feedback right now.
Sure.
We do have a very full agenda moving ahead, and I want each of us to have the opportunity to review what you have given us. I do know that Commissioner Willie is set to come back, but also Commissioner Scouten will be departing at 3 p.m. Would you like us, after we reconvene from a lunch break, to pick back up on this packet and just spend the 15 minutes max to provide our feedback on this and authorization?
That'd be fine. Yeah.
This letter.
This draft letter?
Landed in our email box late yesterday, and I know I've not had an opportunity while sitting here to read it.
But my point is that the target time frame is for the next task force meeting, which is the 18th. I'm just pointing that out.
Okay. Do we have another?
Yes.
That's where I grabbed Andy.
I just wanted to say we've got a little bit more time. It doesn't have to be.
And again, our apologies. We were working right up until the last possible second trying to pull the information together, and we didn't give you adequate time to review it.
So Andy just gave us a little more time. because we just need to get it in the packet that goes out to the task force on Friday.
This Friday?
This Friday.
So we have to decide today, because this is the only time we as a board.
And I know you didn't meet last week.
Right. So we'll come back to this. The proposal was come back to this after the lunch break, so puts on us to spend part of our lunch break to review it.
And we're happy to answer questions, obviously.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so we're going to take a lunch break and reconvene at 1 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay.
Thank you for your discussion on the proof.
It's really awkward and hard work.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's been long.
I like my oldest child.
Yeah.
The two middle childs, my little children. We're going to have to distance.
Caroline, it's been going on for a while.
Yeah, I know.
Good example is this.